Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The debate over education reform continues, but who's talking to students about what they need to really succeed, especially students who come from poor and low-income communities? According to Forbes, only 30% of low-income students enroll in college right after high school, and only 9% earn a bachelor's degree by age 25. Earlier this year, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced plans to donate $120 million to improve Bay Area public schools. In a recent essay for the San Francisco Chronicle, 23-year-old Julia Cook, who recently graduated from Loyola Marymount, wrote about the donation. She wrote, quote, "Computer apps and other technological improvements cannot replace the motivating impact an influential adult has on the life choices of a young person in circumstances similar to mine. Mentors help support the work a teacher does in the classroom. Mentors have to be a part of the solution to ensure students can change their outlook. I believe graduation rates will rise if the educational and after-school disparities are simultaneously addressed." End quote. Julia Cook's father was a drug dealer who was murdered before she learned to walk. Her mother's drug addiction consumed her by the time Cook was 7. And by the time she was 16, she ran away from home. Many children in poor communities face these challenges on a daily basis. In her 23 years, she's had over 30 mentors, and 4 of them attended her college graduation ceremony. So this raises a lot of questions. What do students in underserved communities actually need and want in order to succeed? And how can we address disparities in educational and after-school activities that gives all children a chance at success? Today we are joined by Barb Hendricks, Director of Student Programs at Students Rising Above. That's an organization dedicated to serving low-income first-generation college students graduating college and finding employment. And Barb joins me here in studio. Hi, Barb. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Juliana Ponce. She's a sophomore at Sonoma State. She's also part of the Students Rising Above program. Juliana is currently on track to get into the nursing program at Sonoma State. She recently completed an internship with 826 Valencia in San Francisco, where she worked with children from low-income communities. Hi, Juliana, thanks for coming in.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Nice to have you. And Austin Perez is a junior at the University of Santa Cruz. He's also a Meritus Scholar. The Meritus College Fund is a San Francisco-based organization that provides funding and support for disadvantaged youth. Hi, Austin. Thank you for coming in.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Barb, I want to start off with you because there's such a heated debate around what people call education reform. And I just wonder what that looks like to you, someone who works directly with students who come from poor and low-income communities.
Well, we know from the students that we select from low-income neighborhoods around the Bay Area that those students are ill-prepared to compete at the college level, whether it be UC, CSU, and or at the private school level, that they are accepted to these schools. In fact, they're courted by these schools, but the schools are not giving them the type of support that they need to compete in college or to complete college.
Do you feel like the conversation that we're having right now about education reform is speaking to these students? Do you feel like they're part of this conversation?
I think that from a political standpoint, that they are included in the conversation, but I don't think that it's really addressing the problems for those students.
Juliana, what are your thoughts on that? What do you think about? What goes through your mind when you hear all of these debates around how to improve education?
Well, I think it's just students are having a hard time right now because of course, the economics problems in this society. But I think students need to understand that, yes, there's hard times in life, but they should be motivated to keep going. That hard time should be a reason to keep going and keep rising. But some adults don't understand that it's hard, and they expect us to do better either way, but we still need that push. And I guess adults don't really understand that.
What else don't adults understand, Austin? Because adults tend to dominate the conversation, and we rarely hear from students like you.
I believe vision is a big thing, just because when you're in certain communities, where it's just focused on how to get to school, or just like you're focusing on not getting in fights or whatever. It can be very limiting, and you're not thinking of like the bigger picture of like competing with all these other kids from, you know, in the suburbs or like that have better communities, safer communities. So it's like I guess there has to be more dialogue into parents actually convincing kids that there is a better life than the situation that they're in right now, and that, you know, it only comes with consistency in school. And yeah,
when we do hear about when poverty is brought into the conversation, Barb, it tends to stop there. We don't really hear about what kids are facing. And I was really struck by this essay written by Julia Cook, who's also part of Students Rising Above. And she just wrote about how her father was a drug dealer. He was murdered before she learned to walk. Her mom's drug addiction consumed her by the time Cook was 7. She ran away at 16. I mean, these are the details that are really important to discuss. And she writes, this is very common. Her background is very common. Yet we don't go there. We go sometimes to, well, we need to deal with poverty, but we don't go much further than that. So can you tell us what else are the students facing that you work with?
Yes. So I've been with Students Rising Above for 12 years, and I have seen a lot of disparity at the low-income level. And what happens then, and what our program has been built around, is that we have responded to what the students have told us that they need and how they can succeed. And that has then provided us with a 90% completion rate, college completion rate. We've also found that it's not just going to college and the academics that's important for these students, especially from a low-income first-generation family, and that is that the academics, a lot of them, if they're being admitted to four-year schools, have the academic intuition to be able to compete in terms of going to school and taking college classes. But what they lack then is the frame of reference of what to do with that education. Right. And so what they need to do then is round out their college education with internships, which is why we started the internship program, so that they can have a frame of reference and a networking opportunities and learn how to network within the corporate world and also expand their world in terms of what they like to do. So they come into our program with 5 professions that they would like to do: teachers, lawyers, child psychologists, social welfare workers, all in the helping field, and all wanting to help low-income students behind them. In fact, Juliana just had an internship at A26 Valencia, and again is helping the low-income children behind her so that she can be an example for them to want to aspire and go to college as well. Yeah. We do find as well from the low-income that they do want to be helpful. 85% of our students are altruistic. They definitely want to go back and help their communities. And so we try to expand their world, because if you come from a higher level income, you have that expansion. Your parents are introducing you to all of their friends, and they come from all different colleges and backgrounds. Whereas from low-income families, they aren't introduced to anyone from college backgrounds. Right. And so we work really hard at providing that platform in all different ways.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to also talk about just things that people who have this diverse background, who come from middle or high income families, really don't think about on a regular basis. And so, Austin, you're a first generation college student, right?
Yes.
And before the show started, we were just talking about what that's like, because I am also. And I remember going home over the holidays, and family members just don't even know what to ask you.
Yeah.
They don't know what to ask you about your finals or just what your semester was like. So these are small things, but they're really important. What do you think people need to know about what it is like to be a first-generation college student?
We talked about it earlier. It's just when you're first generation in your family, not a lot of people have the same experience. So it's hard for them to kind of communicate. Like, you're trying to develop yourself as a better human being, like getting all this knowledge. So it's challenging just to come back into your community after you're learning about all these bigger subjects, such as, like, you know, education reform or like low income. So like you're kind of normalized to your situation, but when you start learning about how bad it really is, it's you find like a call to action, but you don't really, it's hard to like communicate with others.
So how did you deal with that, or how do you deal with that?
I Well, thankfully, I had only, like, one cousin that went to UC Santa Cruz before me. And so that kind of acted as, like, the bridge to ease the conversation with my mom and my rest of the family. Because, you know, when they think of college, they the first thing they say, you know, study hard, make sure you don't party too much. And there's, like, that I definitely took that to mind just because I know how hard it was for me to take this opportunity. And so, you know, coming back, you don't want to make anyone disappointed, especially if that title is on me that I'm the first in my family to go. So,
and that is Austin Perez. He's a junior at the University of Santa Cruz. And Juliana, what about you? What sort of challenges did you face that people might not think about?
I guess one was that my mom didn't understand when I would have C's in college. Because in high school, I would get A's and B's, or mostly A's. So then she would see a C in my college, like, report, because I give it to her, you know, sometimes, so she could see that I'm pretty good. But she doesn't understand that it is hard in college, because, of course, she didn't go. So she would keep pushing me, and I would get frustrated. And I guess I didn't have that support that I would wanted from her. So, of course, I went to Students Rising Above, and my mentors and advisors, they would always, you know, support me and help me like I would want. My mother wouldn't really understand the struggles I would go through in college. But, of course, I did get A's and B's in my first year, so that was great. My mom was proud of me. But, of course, when I came back, my mom expected me to be myself when I left. But when I went back, I saw everything different. My eyes were much more open, just like Austin said. You know, you see something more into this economic environment. You're seeing more violence, I guess, in my opinion. Like, I saw more things opening, because I know when I was in high school, I would just close myself and only think about my situation and not about really about others as much. And I saw so much things around me, and that's when I realized that my world is changing, and my mom didn't see that in me as a good thing. She saw it more as a challenge, and I explained to her it's something that I want to do is to help others, and she doesn't really understand that. So
I think, too, socially, it's very difficult because a lot of the students that we have in our program, and we do select students from the high end of the GPA pool, the middle end, and also the lower end of the GPA pool, so that all students in our program have the opportunity to go to college. And the first thing that they realize is that they come from homes, like Julia Cook, who didn't care whether she would come home at night, whether she went to bed at 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night. Mm. And they move into the dorm, and they are now faced with a whole lot of kids who have had curfews, and the lid is now off, and they go crazy, and they're partying, and it's wild in the dorms. And we often have our students say that they don't want to stay in the dorms because it's not the environment that they had gone, that they are going to college for, that they are actually serious about getting an education. And so it means something different to the students in our program, and from a low-income standpoint, because they realize that it is an opportunity, and that it is a lot more serious for them to be able to get that education than from other kids who come from a higher income level.
And how do you at Students Rising Above deal with some of the challenges that Juliana raised? Just her mind completely changed, her views changed when she went to school, and now it's hard for her to communicate with her mom about some of these issues.
So we listen very carefully, and then we respond. And we respond by saying, I think one of the hallmarks of being having advisors and mentors is that we tell the kids to not give up, that these are completely normal feelings for her mom to feel and completely normal feelings for her to feel. And so that there is a very, challenge to bridge that gap. And the gap widens as they continue through college. As Juliana is going to be a sophomore. She's about to go abroad as well in an abroad program because we're very large supporters of that. And so that's going to expand her world even more. Mm-hmm. And so when she comes back and talks about being in Spain for, is it 6 months or a year?
A year.
Oh, wow. For a whole entire year.
That's exciting.
Yes. And then comes back to her neighborhood, that then even creates a bigger discrepancy and disparity. you add the internship opportunities and the work opportunities and the exposure to the corporate world that our program provides through our career development department, and that even then causes a bigger disparity. So we constantly talk to them about that, and we allow them to talk to us as well so that they have a platform by which they can air it out.
That is Barb Hendricks, Director of Student Programs at Students Rising Above. That's an organization dedicated to serving low-income, first-generation college students graduate from college and find employment. We're also joined by Juliana Ponce. She's a sophomore at Sonoma State, part of the Students Rising Above program. She's on track to get into the nursing program. She recently completed an internship with 826 Valencia, working with kids from low-income communities, and she's going to Spain for a year. Austin Perez is a junior at the University of Santa Cruz and Emeritus Scholar. The Emeritus College Fund is a San Francisco-based organization that provides funding and support for disadvantaged youth. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about what kids from disadvantaged backgrounds truly need to succeed. At a time when there's this heated debate over education reform, we rarely hear directly from students, especially students from poor and low-income communities. So if you'd like to join us, if you were raised in an environment like this, or if you're a first-generation college student, what challenges did you face, and what did you really need to succeed? We decided to do this show after we read this really, really great essay by 23-year-old Julia Cook. She just graduated from Loyola, and she wrote about the fact that, yes, computer apps and technology are great, but they really can't replace mentors. And she said that's what she really needed to succeed. So we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. What are your thoughts, Barb, on the essay by Julia? She had more than 30 mentors. Four of them came to her college graduation, and she said that's what helped her. She said computer apps are well and good, but that's not the solution here.
Correct. Well, 30 is a lot.
Yeah.
And since Julia was in our program, one of the challenges that we found with 30 mentors is that they have a lot of different opinions and a lot of different approaches as to what will allow her to succeed in completing college and enter the workforce. We did, from our organization, we did pull the group together so that we could be a cohesive unit, and we called them Team Julia. For Julia in particular, she had a constant magnet from her sister, who was raising two children of her own. And Julia felt very indebted to her sister because her sister often took her in when Julia had no place to live when she was in high school. And Julia also was instrumental in raising those two children.
Wow.
In that she, after school, would babysit the children. So she felt very indebted. So during her summertime, she would be pulled back into the neighborhood, and that always caused a lot of conflict for her. So it was very important for the mentoring to continue to pull her the other way, which is to move her forward and give her all the reasons and the validation as to why she should be in school and why she should complete school, and to break that cycle and be that example for those kids. And that is actually the best example that she could be for them if she could go to college and complete college as well.
Juliana and Austin, what are your thoughts on this focus on technology? Austin, what are your thoughts on that?
I definitely agree with Julie on that one, just because, like, I love having the dialogue with an actual person. Mm. And I believe, like, having the mentors there really helped me out a lot, and especially in my situation with Meritus, because I was on academic probation for my fall quarter of my junior year, and, you know, I didn't really know how to bring that about to my mom. That goes back to the communications with, like, Juliana. I'm pretty sure she, like, when your parents know that you're doing bad in college, they, like, start having a mini heart attack, and so they don't really know how to address it other than, like, what do you need? But I found that, and I told my mom about it, and it's just, it was through Meritus that I got back up on my feet, as opposed to, like, having an online, like, to-do list. Like, oh, step one,
right,
don't go to C-Blade. And so it was, in particular, it was my mentor, Kate Bueller, at Meritus. And when they found out that I was on academic probation, they really, like, they started amping up the communications with me, just because it was kind of like an independent up-to-you sort of deal. But then once they realized I was in danger of getting barred from school, they told me, like, you know, it's, we don't want that to happen. So they helped me, they helped retain me within the university. And that was through, like, daily checkups or weekly checkups, getting a game plan of how I'm going to attack all my classes and succeed in them. And although I was a bit stubborn at times, it got my mind thinking, like, I had to take my college education seriously. And it was through those checkups and just, like, the awesome support at Meritus that I had two strong quarters following that. And it was just such a – I didn't realize it at the time because, like, my mind was working and, like, it was a lot of adrenaline. But now reflecting upon it and just reflecting upon it with my mentors, too, just reflecting on our work, it was – it's gratifying to know that I pulled through and, like, I helped unlock, like, my potential.
Hmm.
By just having that simple dialogue, just having someone there at your back, like, pushing you, like, telling you, you know, like, you can do all this, like, college work. It's not that intimidating.
What about you, Juliana?
Well, what I can say is that what most people say is that machines don't have feelings. And it's actually straightforward. Apps don't have feelings. They can't really respond to your feeling. As a mentor or an advisor, they could tell you, oh, this is how I felt. This is what I did. This is how you should try to approach it, or this is how you should approach it. And that's how I feel. Like, with apps, it does help you a little. Like, you could open an app, say an app that says an advice app or something. Mm-hmm. So, but they just can't feel.
Right.
And I want someone who could feel what I feel, or what someone who has sort of the same background as me, and try to approach it or see it in my view, than a machine who just is a machine that can't really see your point of view. So,
how do you think the money that's being given to schools to focus specifically on technology could be better spent? What would you say to the people who are really focusing on technology?
I would say on classes, because in my school, they give us fancy computers, fancy exercise machines, you know, all that stuff, you know, a fancy pool. But I think we should open more classes, because of that reason, students are graduating faster. Lately, a lot of my friends who are already, like, juniors in college, they tell me, well, I'm going to stay here for, like, 5 years because my classes are backed up and I need my classes. And I think the money should be focused more on that than just technology. Mm-hmm.
I believe that as well. And just on top of that, like, have some money of that money allocated to training, like, counselors of how to have more time with the students, and just, like, training more counselors from the local communities, because a lot of the time, like, kids are presented these, like, fancy toys and, like, technology, but then, like, they don't see, like, the purpose behind of how far how far that technology will help them.
I do believe as well that the advising and mentoring is the secret sauce to students rising above's completion rate. Juliana is very fortunate because her advisor is actually an alum of Students Rising Above. And Lorna Contreras was one of my initial students 12 years ago. And so Lorna does have all the experiences that she can then relate back to the students on how to graduate through. And she's also got her master's degree. So she's a great example for the students. Mm.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about what students, first-generation students, students coming from low-income backgrounds, what they really need to succeed at a time when we're having this huge conversation about education reform. We'll be back after this.
There are lots of ways to join in today's conversation. On your call, on the phone, 866-798-8255, or you can send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. The toll-free number again is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say, and following that at noon, This American Life with Ira Glass.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Joshua Horwitz about his new book, War of the Whales. He looks at the U.S. Navy's submarine surveillance system that floods the ocean with high-intensity sound. The Supreme Court has backed the Navy's use of sonar, and the Obama administration recently okayed the use of sonar for oil exploration off the East Coast. So what impact does sonar have on whales, and what can we do to protect them? And then Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us today, if you have a personal story to share about being a first generation college student, if you had to overcome a lot of challenges as a young person, what did you do? And what did you really need to succeed? If you work with an organization that works with students, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you're a teacher or educator working with low-income youth, we'd love to hear from you. How are you preparing them for success in college and beyond? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Barb Hendricks, Director of Student Programs at Students Rising Above, an organization dedicated to serving low-income, first-generation college students. Juliana Ponce is a sophomore at Sonoma State. She's part of the Students Rising Above program. She's on track to get into the nursing program at Sonoma State, and she is going to study in Spain for a year. We're also joined by Austin Perez, a junior at the University of Santa Cruz and Meritus Scholar. The Meritus College Fund is an organization that provides funding and support for disadvantaged youth in San Francisco. And let's hear from John in Santa Cruz. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Back in 1964, I graduated from Santa Cruz High, and I was the first in my family to go to college, and I had to work my way through college, and I didn't have the social life that other students had. We partied on Friday and Saturday nights, but most of my friends worked also. But the most difficult thing was that we were kind of in a totally different sphere from the majority of students that were going, who either got help from their parents or through grants and scholarships. Hmm. Yeah, and so we kind of hung together and did study groups that reinforced each other. I want to give these kids accolades for their undertaking. It's really hard to persevere when your parents are, my parents especially, were telling me that they really wanted me to work. They said, you got a good job, why do you want to go to school? Mm. And basically that's my comment, that you have to kind of rise above and set your goals.
Thank you. Does this speak to both of you?
Yeah, thanks, John, for that. I have four older siblings, and like right out of high school, they pretty much were going under the mindset of my dad, like, or my parents, you know, telling them to like work as soon as they can so they can help provide for the family. And we had a pretty big family, and I just remember after like my oldest sister is in, finally went to college after a few years out of high school, and she graduated. And I definitely saw the difficulties and hardships it took on her because of having to kind of step up and like sacrifice higher education in order to like for family obligations. And so like I totally empathize with that, and it makes me so grateful for like these programs like Meritus that and Students Rising Above that just want to reach out to kids and tell them like, hey, you can work too, but we provide internships as well as you can be in college. And so like I also had the opportunity to have an internship provided through Meritus, and it was awesome because it was tailored to my my specific like field, and it was, in my case, it was nutrition. And so they paired me up with a nutrition internship, and I could speak more on that later.
Oh, that's great. And what is your sister doing now?
Now she's, well, after graduating from HEALD and going to Hawaii for a short stint, she's trained to be a fitness trainer, mm-hmm. and you know she's really she's trying to compete in like the bodybuilding circuit now, and oh, so like it's pretty inspiring for me.
Something that we find with many of our students is that while they were in high school and still earning a GPA to be accepted into a four-year school, they are the primary breadwinners by working one or two part-time mm-hmm. jobs. And so it is a big challenge. There is the dream of going to college. There is the fantasy, and there's the panache from the parents that, oh, my student, my kid is going to college. But yet when it comes down to reality of actually going to college once they've been accepted, that's a big challenge because the parents now realize, or the parent, that there is that income stream is now no longer. And so we do have to counsel our students a lot about the financial aid that they get so that the money doesn't go back home, because there is a lot of tug and pull, as mm-hmm. I can see that Austin's agreeing with me, and that they really do have to be counseled and advised how to manage the money that they get from financial aid, and also how to make that break, that short-term break, as we try to tell them from the family that the family's no longer going to receive that income, and that by getting a college degree, if they want to continue to help their families financially, that through career development and the internship and the resources that are provided over the 4 to 5 years that they're in our program, they'll be much better prepared to be able to help their families financially.
Hmm. What did you both think about John's comment when he said he struggled fitting in with fellow students in college?
I actually agree on that statement, because I went from an environment of seeing Latinos, African Americans more often than what I saw in Sonoma State, which are very Caucasian white. Mm. And that was a very different environment, because the percentage of African Americans over there are actually 4%.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And it was very different, a very different environment, because they would say words that I wouldn't say. So when I would say a word, they would look at me very weird, and they would just kind of smile and just say, okay. but I did overcome it, and I learned about their environment, and they learned more about me. And luckily, I had EOP, which is a very diverse program, and luckily, I had friends who had the same background as me.
What is EOP?
EOP is an education
opportunity program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they help you. They give you a little money as well, and they give you a special advisor as well. And people come together from different backgrounds who are very low income, just like Students Rising Above, but it's more specifically for Sonoma State students. And I met a lot of different people there, and I was grateful because they were there to help me out when I didn't really get along with Caucasian white people. So they were there to support me throughout my first year. So,
did you have similar experiences, Austin?
Yeah, mildly. Just because I moved a lot when I was younger. And so it was all around the Bay Area. And then I ended up in this East Bay, like around Antioch and Concord area for a few years. And so it was a lot of the transitioning of like, when I got to Santa Cruz, I saw a lot of mixed of everyone. I knew the dominant populations were Caucasian and Latino, and it was just, I feel like there was a lot of like politics regarding race when I got there. But I know where like being raised in San Francisco, you have the awesome opportunity to be, you know, around a lot of diverse people, and the adjustment wasn't as hard for me just because I knew like you'll find support in, you know, anyone. Like, we're all just kids just trying to make sense of college at the first point. So.
Right. Well, thank you for calling in, John, and thanks for sharing your story. Let's go next to Phil in Brisbane. Hi, Phil. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm sorry I tuned in late today, so I may have missed some of the things that you were talking about, but I did hear about Students Rising Above and just now the EOP program. But the reason I'm calling is that I'm at a stage now where I want to do something vital and worthwhile, and I'm sick of my day job. And what I can give is children's art classes. And I've been looking around online in the Bay Area for something like that. And I've seen a lot of private classes available. And, you know, wealthy children and children of the middle class, they can get all the art they want if they really want it. But poor children are deprived, I feel. And I did work for a while with some program for some poor children, and it was just wonderful. And my question is, can you direct me to any programs in the Bay Area where I might be able to do something like that? I haven't seen much online.
All right. Well, thank you, Phil. Barb, do you have any recommendations?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that.
well, we can think about it and then maybe put some links
on
the website.
I would say that we can definitely think about it.
Okay.
I do know that there are not a lot of art classes for low-income students, and certainly is a gap for them.
Right.
But I don't know of any distinct or programs that address that.
Okay. Well, right, because we talk about the fact that there's not much art, music, a lot of the things we used to call electives and we took for granted back then, but now it's not available. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, when we're talking about curriculum, does the curriculum speak to both of you based on your past experiences?
Like in college?
In college. And also in high school, did it speak to you?
Well, in college, there's like a vast plethora of classes you can take. And art is a pretty big major at Santa Cruz. And it's the art that they put out for finals week is awesome. But it speaks to me. I feel like definitely in high school, it was under-resourced. Just because, like, I never had it myself, but I just remember hearing my friends just say, like, it was, you know, it was kind of repetitive and just, like, you know, not the best of, like, quality materials. But so far as, like, answering, like, Phil's request or, like, question, I know that there's some graffiti projects, like, regarding art around the city. Like, for example, you'll see on Alamany, there's, like, a whole mural of the whole fences all graffitied up, and it's sponsored by like a program for the community, and it's beautiful, but I don't know what exactly that group is called, but that's just one of the things. If you just walk around the city, look at some of the art on the wall, you could probably network and connect with them through there.
I think also if you go to the art museums in the city, that they may have programs, volunteer and optional and volunteer programs for low-income children as well.
Anything to add, Juliana, specifically also about the curriculum?
I would like to add that in my high school, we actually had art, but unfortunately, my art teacher, she was pregnant and she left the school. And when I went back to visit my high school, they said they didn't have any more art. And I said, well, what do you have? And they said, drama. And I asked why drama, what happened to art? And well, I asked my principal, and my principal said, well, not a lot of people want to be art teachers anymore. They can't find art teachers anymore. And it's pretty sad, in my opinion, because I actually like art. My mom loves art. She used to paint a lot and draw a lot. But unfortunately, she had to stop to support my siblings and, of course, myself. And it means a lot to me that students should go out more into, like, art, music, because in my opinion, it kind of calms them, because it calms me when I do something like that, because when I know when you're stressed out in college or stressed out in the world, you kind of rely on music or art because it kind of relates to you or relates to your feeling, and I think it's a big deal in my opinion, so I think that's another thing that education money should go towards.
So, Phil, I think there's, as Juliana said, there's clearly a need. And I would approach your local neighborhood schools, middle school, high school, and offer your services as an after-school program. And I'm willing to bet that they will take you up on it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Phil. And today we are talking about what it takes to really succeed in school, especially when we're talking about first-generation college students and students who come from low-income and poor communities. And we're joined by Barb Hendricks, Director of Student Programs at Students Rising Above, an organization dedicated to serving low-income, first-generation college students. Juliana Ponce is a sophomore at Sonoma State. She's part of the Students Rising program, and she's on track to get into the nursing program at Sonoma State. Austin Perez is a junior at the University of Santa Cruz and Meritus Scholar. The Meritus College Fund is an organization that provides funding and support for disadvantaged youth. And you can join us at 866-798 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear next from Key Monica in San Jose. Hi, Key Monica. Welcome to the show.
Hey there.
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, great. So I was calling in to tell you guys about a program that sounds similar to the one you guys are talking about. It's called Gear Up, Y-E-A-R-U-P, Gear Up, and it's a program for ages 18 to 25. It's in the Bay Area located. They have two offices, one in San Francisco and one in Silicon Valley, and basically it's a year-long program that you go through. It's 6 months learning and development and then 6 months at an internship, and they intern with people like Wells Fargo, Salesforce. There's a couple of other big companies that they also work with for the internships. And then hopefully after you've gone through your internship and finished, then you'll hopefully get a position at one of those companies you interned at.
Great. Thank you so much. So Key Up, and we will put a link to that on, I'm sorry, Year Up, and we'll put a link to that on our website, yourcallradio.org. Thank you for calling, Key Monica. Let's go next to Pat in San Francisco. Hi, Pat.
Hello?
Hi.
Yeah, I've got nothing against kids getting into college, but it seems that everything is bent towards students going to college, but not everybody has that academic, I don't want to say capability, but mindset. And when I went to school, there was you learned the trades also. I picked up enough in basic carpentry to get into an apprentice program, and was able to learn basic carpentry and survived that way until I was in my 40s when I was mentally ready to go into college.
Well, thank you for calling in. Thanks for sharing that story. We've got just about 8 minutes or about 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you both, what else, I mean, based on you know what you're dealing with right now. Austin, you're going to UC Santa Cruz. Juliana, you're going to Sonoma State. And Barb, you work with so many students. What else do we need to focus on to, in terms of what you need to succeed? What else is important? We're hearing about mentors, support from adults. Mm. What else would you add to that?
I guess that last caller had a really, I forgot his name. Anyways, I think
that was Pat.
Pat,
yeah.
I know everyone's gearing towards college and all. The mentors definitely are benefited as well. But also, like when the mentors are talking with us and they're guiding us through college and finding our career. Also, I think they already got a spot on, but like they're helping us develop our own skills towards our career, and that can come in any type of trade, I guess. But just because like of the resources that they provide, through career building or through internships, like that's the best that we can ask for. Just because a lot of kids aren't really used to speaking out about like what they want to do and what steps to take, and so I just feel like more exposure to the opportunities available, whether it be a mentor like calling you constantly and telling you about this opportunity that's about to end, like getting an internship at a company or have you, what have you.
I think that's a really important point, and I think that career mentors are as equally as important as advising mentors, and we're creating this huge career mentor base of people who will simply talk to a student about their profession and or allow them to shadow half day. And we are always encouraging people to apply on our website if you're interested in being a career mentor and actually or a mentor to one of our students. You can go to our website and apply for that.
Oh, great.
I think that it's really important.
What is the time commitment for that?
It can be anything that the person wants.
Oh, okay.
So it can be as little as I'd like to speak to two of your students that are interested in STEM careers, and or I'd like to be the resource for that student if they would like to speak to me about a STEM career, if it's a doctor or a research or in biotech or whatever it is. And then we will actually reach out to our students and say, this is who we have as a resource for you. Anybody want to speak to this person? Or half-day shadow days. Or we've also been really successful in creating half-day speed networking days with corporations around the Bay Area, and we'll have maybe 10 to 12 students attend for a half a day so that they can meet a number of employees in that company and see that there's all kinds of different professions within a tech company, for instance, that you don't have to be an engineer in order to be hired with Apple or some of the bigger names. So I think Career Mentors is something else that everyone can use.
And I would like to say that I think his name was Pat.
Yes.
Yes. I know he said that it took him to be like 40 years old to go to college. And I think I would like to say, like, there is no age limit to even go. As long as you go and get your education, it matters, in my opinion. Because I read on my school blog or a newspaper in my school, I can't remember, actually, a 70-year-old woman just graduated from college, got a bachelor's, and I was so proud. She was so happy in the photo, and I'm like, it's never too late to get an education. And I think that's kind of the key. It kind of takes time for students. If you're not in a young age and you're not in that mindset of, okay, I don't want to go to college, okay, it's understandable, but just don't never go. Oh, there's always a time for you to go.
And we have an email from a listener, Lori Vargas with Mentoring for Success, a recent guest. She says, mentoring truly does make a difference. As a district coordinator for Mentoring for Success, I have had the fortunate opportunity to see how mentoring can help guide youth in a sometimes difficult world. A caring adult helping a young person discover their path has rewards on both ends. We're currently recruiting new members and always looking for volunteers who might be interested in sharing their expertise like Phil in Brisbane during our monthly group activities. And the website is healthiersf.org/mentoring for success. And Phil, we have an email for you about serving youth in the Bay Area through art. Kate writes, the Imagine Bus Project is an inspiring nonprofit bringing art to underserved youth both in after-school programs and juvenile hall. It's a great place for you to check out. It's imaginebusproject.org. So thank you so much for that email. I also wanted to ask you about college costs, because it's so expensive now. In some cases, it's not even affordable for people to go to community college. So how are you both dealing with that? I mean, even applying for college can now cost, what, $100 per application?
Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of, being that my family's like low income, or I live in a single parent household under my mom. And that kind of, there's a lot of programs that kind of helped us. At least I got free applications to apply to college. But I knew for a lot of my friends all around the Bay Area that were middle class, that wasn't the case. And it was pretty hard. It was kind of uninspiring for them to even want to go to college, especially if you have to pay and you don't even have that chance of it getting in. But definitely my financial aid package helped me a lot, just because they know, like, my family doesn't earn that much. And, you know, it's all about just, like, paying it forward for me, at least, just because I know how much aid I'm being given right now. And I just can't wait to see where my college career will take me so I can, like, pay back the dividends and all that. So, yeah. That's...
Juliana?
Well, how I manage myself is that at first, when I went to my high school, they told me that you have a limit of free applications for college, and I used those. But I didn't really pay for any more because I didn't really apply for so much. I only, of course, applied for 4 UCs and 4 CSUs, and I think it was a few privates. And how I really manage my money is that I work and I save up my money and calculate what I need. What I think it's the best way is just to try to manage your money, or try to have like a simple plan. And like Austin said, you know, financial aid helped me really a lot, and I'm really grateful for that. And I'm actually grateful now because without financial aid, I would not be going to Spain. Mm. So that's very exciting.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much how I manage my money. And of course, Students Rising Above gets me internships that are paid, and I save that money up through summer, and then I use that summer money for my following year in college. So that's how I pretty much manage my money.
I do think that from I I want to speak to what Austin just said, because for low income, there are lots of programs, lots of grants, grant opportunities, and lots of scholarships that the students can apply. And now with the internet, you can go online and find all kinds of resources that will help you to that end. The middle class is the one that's being left out of this because they make too much money in order to qualify. And so for our own program, for instance, family income to be part of our program is somewhere around $55,000. Well, that in the Bay Area is very low income. But anything above that at the college level, they don't see as low income. Wow. And they do take away the financial aid opportunities for that income level. And that is a very difficult situation for a lot of the kids that are in that middle income range.
And we've only got about 30 seconds, but are you seeing more and more students now contacting Students Rising Above as the word
yes.
gets out?
So I'm so glad you mentioned that because we had close to 755 or close to 800 applications.
Wow.
We could only take 110 this year.
110 out of 800?
Yes, unfortunately. Wow. And that, of course, is the bottom line. We would love to take all 800 and the revenue. Mm-hmm. We would reach out to the community in all ways. We need the support. And with our college completion rate, it's a great return on investment, not just for the person who is donating, but also to society in general. So, yes, there is a huge need,
90% college completion rate.
Correct.
Barb Hendricks is Director of Student Programs at Students Rising Above, an organization that serves low-income first-generation college students. Juliana Ponce is a sophomore at Sonoma State, on track to get into the nursing program and have a great time in Spain.
Thank you.
And Austin Perez is a junior at UC Santa Cruz and emeritus scholar. The Meritage College Fund provides funding and support for disadvantaged youth. And thank you all so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What dangers do whales face today? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Joshua Horwitz, author of War of the Whales. He looks at the U.S. Navy's submarine surveillance system that floods the ocean with high-intensity sound. The Supreme Court backed the Navy's use of sonar in spite of its deadly effects on whales, and the Obama administration recently okayed the use of sonar for oil exploration off the East Coast. So what impact does sonar have on the whales? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.